This is the Real World DevOps Podcast, and I'm your host, Mike Julian. I'm setting out to meet the most interesting people doing awesome work in the world of DevOps, from the creators of your favorite tools to the organizers of amazing conferences. From the authors of great books to fantastic public speakers, I want to introduce you to the most interesting people I can find. This episode is sponsored by the lovely folks at Influx Data. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably also interested in better monitoring tools, and that's where Influx comes in. Personally, I'm a huge fan of their products, and I often recommend them to my own clients. You're probably familiar with their time series database, InfluxDB, but you may not be as familiar with their other tools. Telegraph for metrics collection from systems, Chronograph for visualization, and Capacitor for real-time streaming. All of these are available as open source and as a hosted SaaS solution. You can check all of it out at influxdata.com. My thanks to Influx Data for helping make this podcast possible. Hi, folks. I'm Mike Julian, your host for the Real World DevOps Podcast. My guest this week is VM Brasseur, otherwise known as Vicky, an expert in open source strategy and the author of the book Forge Your Future with Open Source. She's previously the vice president of the Open Source Initiative and currently director of open source strategy at Juniper Networks. Well, Vicky, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. I'm very happy to be here.
I want to start with a seemingly simple question, but I have recently learned in like the past half hour that is more complex than it seems. What is open source?
Gee, I can't imagine how you learned that. No, it's a question that a lot of folks in technology think they know the answer to, but unfortunately, they're usually wrong. And that's because they usually don't realize that there is a legitimate definition of what it means to be open source software. It is called the open source definition. It is maintained by the Open Source Initiative. And if something does not adhere to each of those 10 points on the open source definition, it isn't really open source. So unfortunately, people just sort of assume, well, if my source is out there, if my source code is out there, it's open, right? Well, not really. Because if you restrict it in any way, or if you don't put an appropriate license on it, then people don't know it's open source. If you just put your code out there without a license, for instance, it's all rights reserved. You have the copyright over that code, or your company, if you developed it for your company. So it's all rights reserved as far as copyright, and no one else can use it unless you put a license on it. And that's what the license does for you. And only an open source license, one that is approved by the Open Source Initiative, that's the only kind that you can be assured actually gives you all of the things that the open source definition guarantees.
What's really interesting to me about that is there's always people that go around GitHub on like the main projects and say, hey, I noticed that you don't have this license. Like you should really have a license file. And I'd always thought that that was just kind of an oversight. Like, oh yeah, it's fine. It's totally open source. There's just no license. There's no license file. You're actually telling us is that if you don't have that, if you haven't specified what license this is under, by default, it's not open source. Like it is all rights reserved.
It is, exactly. It is all rights reserved. The best you can call it is source available, but you still retain all of the copyright over that. And therefore it is all rights reserved. You retain all the rights to that code. No one can use that software at all, unless you give them the rights to it. That means somebody could use your software and put themselves at legal risk by violating the copyright of your software and you. If you don't put a license on it, that's what they're doing. And so therefore, they're at legal risk, they can get sued, and if they are running a company and they're using your software, they can't really get acquired, frankly, if they are using software that is encumbered by somebody else's copyright. And that's why it's so important for multiple reasons to make sure you have a license on there. It really takes care of all those legalities. And if you use one of those, it's a relatively short list of OSI approved licenses. You've got the Apache and the MIT and, you know, all your GPL flavors and LGPL and AGPL. And, you know, there's a bunch of them. and they cover a broad swath of things. But if you just use one of them, you don't have to care about the legalities. Somebody has already taken the time to figure that out for you. Professional lawyers have written these things, gotten them approved by OSI. You know they give you everything from the open source definition, and you know it's legal. Just use it, right? It's pretty easy.
So you just named off a whole bunch of different open source licensing. And I'm always kind of confused when I release a project, like, what should I license this under? Screw it. I'll go with MIT or Apache and call it a day. And I never really put any thought into it. But there's a lot of these licenses. So presumably I should probably be putting more than 2 seconds of thought into which of them, or, you know, if I'm even doing open source at all.
It depends. I mean, if you're a business, you're going to put a great deal of thought into this because you have specific business requirements and strategic needs for releasing that software at all. If you don't care, put GPL v3, put MIT. Just slap that on there and throw it over the wall. If you don't care, don't think about it. GPL v3, MIT. That's great. If you care about software freedom, if you care about the morality of allowing other people to look at and manipulate and redistribute your software, use a copy left software, use GPL v3. If really you could not give two farts about that, then put MIT on it and just get it out there, but license it appropriately. Otherwise, you're screwed. If you really have a lot of other considerations as far as, you know, some sort of patent concerns or something like that, that's when you need to take it to your lawyer and have them look at it and figure out strategically what makes the most sense. But if you're just an individual, you know, default to GPL v3, default to MIT, you should be fine.
It sounds like there's actually a whole lot more to open sourcing something than just kind of slapping a license on it and throwing it on GitHub.
Yes.
Especially if I'm a company.
So much more. I mean, if you're an individual even, it's very important that you do more than just a slap a license on it. I know I've been saying that the past, 5 minutes. Just slap a license on it and move on. But unfortunately, it is slightly more complicated than that, but not much. And that's because most software is composed of multiple different pieces of code, right? You've got this module, that module, this library, that library. Now, with open source, as you release it, someone doesn't just have to take your whole package and move on. If they want, they can cherry pick individual pieces of your code. They can just take one module if it does what they want, for instance. Now, if all you do is you slap a license file in that repository, then you walk away. If someone just takes that one piece of code, then later on, when they're under a merger and acquisition situation, for instance, that piece of code is going to be found. And nobody will know where it came from. You won't have some sort of path showing that, oh, I wrote this. So you won't be able to prove it via version control. And you won't have a license file. You won't know who wrote it. You won't know under what license you're using it. So you're going to be in a big kind of bind depending upon the software. You might have to completely re-architect to get that out of there or rewrite it or something like that. So you don't have that copyright encumbrance because while it was originally open source, you don't know where it came from, right? You don't have the provenance. So as you are releasing software, make it so much easier for everyone. At the very top of each file, I know, and developers roll their eyes every time I say this, but come on, people. We have tools now that can avoid this, and you can zip that up and you don't see it. At the top of your file, just have a commented out section, which is a simple copyright statement. Copyright, Mike Julian, 2019. Done. And then underneath that, you put licensed under, you know, GPL v3. Say that. Those two lines at the top of every single file, you know now, if that file gets lifted out and used elsewhere, somebody will know under what rights they are allowed to use it and who wrote it. So they have their legal butt covered because you have put a copyright and a license statement in there. Then you have the full copyright file elsewhere in your repository. I have a nice big section on this in my book on how to release your software if you're just kind of as an individual. As a company, yeah, there's a lot more concerns. Because I personally, at Juniper, I don't want to release software, A, if it has IP concerns that we can make money off of. So I need to talk to legal. I need to talk to the product teams. I need to figure out how to get this released appropriately because just throwing it over the wall as an open source project appropriately licensed is one thing, but my company is not going to get any benefit out of it if we don't treat the community properly, if we don't actually engage in it. All we're going to get is people looking at it and saying, yeah, hey, look, Juniper released code. Isn't that cool? And there's a lot of benefit in that. Don't get me wrong, but there is so much more benefit in building a community of users and of contributors. And that can gain companies a great deal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I've definitely been in companies where they have a strong culture of being and working in the open source community. Like they have software they've open sourced and they're maintaining it. They're actively growing communities around it. And that brings them so much goodwill in the community, not to mention it brings them more business as well as recruiting. Like it's a huge recruiting magnet too.
Mm-hmm. It's a massive recruiting magnet. And why would you not do this appropriately and build a community for recruiting alone? I used to run software engineering departments at the VP level at various companies, and the amount of time and effort and money that goes into the recruiting is spectacular, depending upon the whatever employment firm is putting out the study. It can be anywhere from 150 to 250 or more percent of that person's salary. That's how much it costs to replace them. So A, you want to manage appropriately so they don't leave in the first place, so you don't get that 150 to 250% hit on their salary. But also, you want to make it as quick and easy as possible to get the right person in there. Now, if I'm using open source software strategically within my company to build my products, and I'm releasing software appropriately, and I'm engaging with all of these communities in an authentic way, then what I am doing is I am meeting a lot of people who already are familiar with my stack, who already know, you know, Istio and Kubernetes and, you know, name your flavor of the week. But they'll know that, and they'll know my company. When I come knocking saying, hey, I have an opening, I'm going to have people lined out the door. And they not only will they be more qualified to come on board, but since they already know the stack, their onboarding time is dramatically cut. And so therefore, they can get more productive more quickly because they already know the software. They don't necessarily know all the special little delicate snowflake things of my stack, but they're familiar with the software. And I don't have to teach them YAML and, you know, stuff like that, right? So I'm not going to get that if my company isn't being an authentic community member in the free and open source software communities that my company is using and participating in and really relies on.
Right. So you've been talking about this concepts of open source strategy for years. And it sounds like a lot of what we're just now discussing is part of that idea of like the open source strategy. Is there more to it?
Yes. What a leading question. Yes. Oh my gosh.
What else am I missing? Please tell us more.
So, I mean, there's using open source software. And if you look at the various studies out there, it's anywhere from, you know, 70% to 90% of the software that's being used and written right now is relying on free and open source software in some way. And we're not just simply counting Linux in there, but it's everything else. It's the entire Node ecosystem and it's Python and it's PHP and it's, you know, everything. It's huge. Everything relies on free and open source software. So that, frankly, that's not really strategic. That's just a gimme. Yeah, whatever. You're going to be using free and open
source software. Of course we're going to use Apache.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. That's what we're going to do. Everyone does this. It would be stupid for us to roll our own at that point. Are you going to roll your own SSL libraries? Not if you're wise, that sort of thing. You're going to use.
I sure hope you aren't.
Oh, please. And if you are, stop now. Just stop. Back away slowly. So there's that, but there's, so you know you're using these things, but some of them are more important than others. So what makes the most sense for your business to be looking at, to be investing in? Because you could just throw money and people and time at every single thing you use in your stack, but that doesn't make a lot of sense. You have due diligence you have to perform, and you have to look at this strategically. And it's not just releasing software strategically such that you can get the benefits of it, but it's also supporting software strategically. And it's contributing to software strategically. You have to know how to do that properly and how your people have to be trained appropriately. You have to have policies in place for compliance and various things like that. There's just so many different moving parts to doing open source well from a business point of view. A lot of companies think they know how to do it. And as a now former, thank you, Juniper, free and open source software business strategist, I'm here to tell you most companies do it wrong. And they're putting themselves right. at massive risk. They just assume they know what they're doing, but it's as though they learned about open source software like most open source practitioners now learned about it via the telephone game. They heard from someone who heard from someone who heard from someone who heard from someone who heard from, I don't know, Stallman 40 years ago. This is what it's about. And so therefore, they know what they're talking about. And I'm sorry, they don't. They just don't. So there's a lot to this to do it properly.
So I guess on that note, shifting gears a little bit, let's talk about open source business models. This has been a hot topic in the news in the past couple of years with Amazon trying to kill Mongo and then Amazon trying to kill Elasticsearch. And well, basically Amazon just trying to kill everyone. What's going on with this? These concepts of an open source business model? Why are people suddenly changing their licensing now? What's going on there?
You can't see me gritting my teeth because this is radio, so to speak. There is not now, and there never will be, an open source business model, full stop. People who say there is know absolutely nothing about business. And my goodness, it's difficult not dropping F-bombs right now because I'm pretty passionate about this subject. There is no open source business model. Open source is one of the many tools you use to make your business successful. Just like any other tool you are using, just like your marketing team, your sales team, all the tools you're using, Salesforce and you know, the people who are cleaning up your office, they're helping to make your company successful. Your support team is incredibly useful to make your company successful. Open source software is just another one of those things. And if you, as a business, are going to release your secret sauce and you're going to put it out there for the world to see and take and put it under an OSI-approved free and open source software license, and then you're going to get your knickers in a twist because someone else takes it and does something with it, I'm sorry. The license you put on there, that is, you have given them permission to do this. They are doing exactly what you told them they could do. It is not their fault if you can't run a damn business. If they take this open source software that you have released and they make a more compelling business and product offering out of it than you do, that's not their fault. That's yours. That's you not listening to the market. That's you not listening to the users. That's you not able to deliver on your particular business prospect. So that's not the fault of open source. You got to learn how to do some business, honey. There is no open source software or business model. There is only business models. And open source is one of the many things that can help contribute to a successful business model. Sorry, I did say I was a little passionate about this.
I really wish I had an applause sound effect right now. It'd be great. Yay. Like, that was all very enlightening. So there's no such thing as an open source business model. Instead, we use open source as a technique for growing our business. But really, we still need a business model to begin with. And open source is just a component of that.
Yes.
So looking at companies like, I really don't mean to be calling out Mongo and Elasticsearch, but like they're the two most recent ones. In those situations, what should they have considered doing instead of, as you say, getting their knickers in a twist over something they told the market was felt totally fine? Like, what's the other option?
Well, I can't say specifically what these companies could have done or should have done because I don't know what they did do.
Let's come at it from a different angle rather than telling some other company what they should do. Let's say that I'm writing some software that is kind of along the same lines of I want to open source it for the world to use and use that as a lead gen to sell my commercial offering. But you know, that sounds an awful lot like what everyone else has already been doing, and now they're getting their lunch eaten. What are my other options? What else could I consider?
Well, there are multiple business aspects that you could take there. I mean, yes, a lot of other companies are going the open core model, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with the open core model. Now, for the listeners who don't know what that is, it is essentially where you have the core of your software be under a free and open source software license, and it's freely available. And then you can have an enterprise version that you sell that has value adds on top of it. So you have your core version that's free and anyone can take and do it with. And then you have your enterprise version that people pay for and they get increased support or they get more features or they get more speed or more seats or whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. That's part of your business model. That's part of your business. So there's nothing wrong with open core in that way. That's perfectly fine. Part of what these particular companies are complaining about is, as you mentioned earlier, saying that other companies are eating their lunch by taking these things and not contributing back to the software itself. I am going to take your database software and I'm going to have another offering and I'm going to build a better product on it. And so I'm going to, take your customers. Okay. That's fine. And that's perfectly okay. But using that software and not giving back to it is kind of dirty pool. In the free and open source software world, we kind of call that the free rider problem, where people are using the software and not contributing back. Now, these companies that have recently switched licensing and said, oh my gosh, open source business model doesn't work. Yawn, whatever, your business model doesn't work. There is no open source business model. It's like saying unicorns don't work. They all complain about this, but none of them have ever once said, and here's how we reached out to these other companies and asked them to contribute to the community. None of them have said, and here's how we asked how we can make it easier for them to contribute to the community. None of them are talking about the attempts they have made to try to get other community members. And frankly, if you look at their repositories for their core software, it doesn't look like they've done that for anyone. So you can't point fingers at a large bookstore to the north of me saying that they have been doing bad things if you haven't been running a good community. If you are just doing things where you are the only people who are playing in your little sandbox, you're not letting anyone else in, and then you get really pissed off if someone else builds their own sandbox next door out of the same sand you're using, I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense to me. If you want your free and open source software project to be successful, you have to build a good community around it. And that means reaching out rather than expecting everyone else to reach in. Meet the people where they are and try to figure out how you can make it easier for them to become a part of the community, because that becomes the rising tide that lifts all boats. How many metaphors could I throw into this particular rant? But a lot of them. So that's something that I think a lot of companies do very, very poorly when they release this software, is they just assume if I release it, they will come. And no, that is not what happens. Community takes time. Community takes effort. If you want your open source software to benefit you more than just, word of mouth of look at them releasing something, you have to put a lot of effort into it to get it right. Sorry, little mini rant there.
So it sounds like the community is really the core facet of all this. If you want good software, you want people to really like using your software, you need to build community. You need to foster that. What are some tips for how we could, if I'm launching a new piece of software, how can I grow my community from there?
So how do you grow your community? Well, there's lots of different ways to do this. And Mary Thangvall has a really great book that's come out recently that's related to community. So you should check that out. It's officially about developer advocates, but there's a ton of community work in that. And Mary does really great work in community. So she is your community specialist. However, being in free and open source software for like 30 years now, I have picked up a few things about community, so I feel more than qualified to talk about this. Number one, documentation for love a dog. Write everything down, document all this stuff. Documentation is going to scale so much better than your developers. So make sure you have stuff documented before you release it. And by stuff, I mean how to stand up your developer environment, how to get started, why would I even want to use this software, here's our glossary, And very importantly, how do we contribute? How do I, as a user of your software, how do I show up and even just make a simple bug patch? How do I send a documentation patch? How do I do even the simplest stuff? Where do I communicate with you? Right? Document all of those things as well, and really just throw open the doors. Also, it's absolutely vital. It's table stakes now. And people who say otherwise are probably jerks you don't want in your community anyway. But it's table stakes to have a code of conduct and to enforce it. Because if your community, if your project is not friendly to people, if it doesn't treat people with the basic level of respect that a code of conduct allows them to be ensured, then your community is not somewhere that anyone wants to be at, which means you don't have a community, you have a cesspit. So get a code of conduct. Learn how to use it.
Completely agreed.
So, yeah. There's many different other things you can do as far as building community, but those are some of the starters.
Yeah, those are some really great tips. So shifting gears a little bit, you and I were talking before we started about this, a concept you've been talking about called open source sustainability. Could you tell us more about that? Like, what is it? What's your idea?
So this is a big buzzword in free and open source software circles lately, is all about making free and open source software sustainable. And this started, well, we've been kind of been talking about it for a long time because of this whole free rider problem, the free rider, mm-hmm. You can't see my air quotes, but that's been something that we talk about in free and open source software for a very long time, is people using but not contributing back. Okay, that's a problem. And that's something that we can potentially work to not fix, but at least shift a bit. So that's something, but this is really, we've been talking about that for a long time. But a few years ago, Nadia Eggball came out with a study through the Ford Foundation called Roads and Bridges. And it was about the, the crumbling infrastructure of free and open source software and how so much of what we use is not well maintained. That led to a lot of conversations around this. We've all seen problems with this around OpenSSL and Heartbleed, how there just weren't enough people there to go maintaining it, and they were killing themselves almost literally to maintain the software.
Turns out it's like one person that is kind of doing most of the work.
There was a lot going on there. And that started a conversation around what does it mean to make sure our free and open source software projects, on which we all rely because we've all built our businesses on them, what can we do to make sure that free and open source software is sustainable and will stay around? Because frankly, to me, it's a business risk to be using something that's not maintained.
Absolutely.
Right? I can't put my company's money into something that I can't guarantee is going to be maintained for a long amount of time. Now, because we're in technology, and because most of technology is run by VCs, most of the conversation around open source sustainability has focused laser focused on money. What we're going to do is we're going to get a ton of money and we're going to pay these maintainers. And if we pay these maintainers, it'll all be better because money fixes all the problems. And what money doesn't fix, technology does. And no, for crying out loud, no, that's not the only way to solve this problem. This is a social problem as well as a financial problem. So I have in the past managed a team where people were paid to contribute to free and open source software projects. That's all they were paid to do, is make these open source projects better in whatever makes sense for you. And these projects were very strategic for the company. So it made sense for the company to be paying people to make these strategic things better for them, which was brilliant for the company. I'm really glad they did that. But at least one of those people was the only maintainer on an absolutely vital piece of internet infrastructure, like something that ran so many different things. I know exactly how much this person made because they reported to me. And I also know that throwing more money at the problem was not going to solve the fact that they were working 70 to 80 hours a week to try to maintain this. That is not a money problem. That is a resourcing problem. It's a standard sort of management issue. What we have to do if we want things to be more maintainable is you fix that. You fix that bottleneck. You fix that incredibly horrible bus factor of one. And that's what you have in a lot of free and open source software projects. Now, how do you fix that? Is you as a company need to contribute back. And by contributing back, I'm not just talking about throwing money at the problem. You have to contribute resources. Those resources can be human. They can be technological for servers to help scale things out better. They can be more people to document. They can be people to design. They can be people to market. You know, it doesn't matter, but get these vital free and open source software contributors support. And that support is not necessarily money. Money helps. And certainly all of these people would love to get paid more and get paid full time to work in their free and open source software projects. But it's not going to help if they are still the only one and they are still working 80 plus hours a week to save your ass some time. So give back and contribute to and learn how to contribute to these projects, which is where I'm going to plug my book, frankly, because we didn't talk about this, but I'm going to do it. It is the only book on how to contribute to free and open source software projects. And if people don't do this properly, free and open source software will not scale. It is growing at millions of new open repositories in GitHub alone every single year. That's just GitHub. That doesn't count GitLab. That doesn't count Bitbucket. That doesn't count, you know, all the things that Apache and all these other projects are running. Millions of new repositories every year. Who's going to maintain that? We need to train people how to contribute to open source software. And that's why I wrote my book, because otherwise we are going to collapse under our own weight. So please learn how to do this.
On that note, where can we find your book?
Ooh, where can we find it? Will there be show notes?
There will be show notes.
Okay, good. Well, there will be a link in the show notes then. But the link, which will go directly to my publisher, is fossforge.com. So FOSSFORG.com. And that will go directly to the Pragmatic Bookshelf page for this. I love the Pragmatic folks.
Wonderful.
They've been so amazing to work with. So if you ever need to write a book, man, go with them. They're so fun.
Yeah, that's great to hear. So aside from your book, where can more people find out about you and your work?
Oh, about me. Well, they can go to my blog, which is anonymoushash.vmbrasseur.com. You can also just find it from my website, which is vmbrasseur.com. And I do way too much of the Twittering, so that's probably the best way to keep up with all the things that are on my mind right now. You're not going to see, you know, this is what I had for lunch, or OMG, look at the cute kitties. That goes in a different Twitter account. But you will hear all
open
about
open source all the time.
Yes, this one is open source all the time, management all the time. It's a lot less dull than that, but trust me, yeah. I hope.
All right. Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an absolute pleasure to have you.
It's been super fun. I love talking about this stuff, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to do so.
Well, thank you. And so all our listeners, thank you for listening to the Real World DevOps podcast. If you want to stay up to date on the latest episodes, you can find us at realworlddevops.com. And on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever it is you get your podcast. I'll see you in the next episode.
This has been a Humble Pod production. Stay humble.